It's time to get nerdy, y'all.
A little bit of gaming history for you.
Something relevant in gaming and discuss our opinions on it.
Should we kick it out of here or should we kickstart it?
This is the part where you, the listeners, try to stump the hosts.
I'm not a lawyer, I just play one on a podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it's Tuesday, May 5th, 2020, and you know what that means. It's Cinco de Mayo, and also it's time to get nerdy, y'all. Welcome to episode number 138 of Two Nerds in a Pod, the nerdiest gaming podcast in the galaxy. I am Lom, also known as Mr. Nice Guy, and I've got my comrade in gaming commentary here with me, the Miggity 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 Mac, also known as Maxion. Mac, what's good, buddy? How are you?
I'm doing okay. Quite exhausted because it was a rough, very physical day at work today. But overall, I feel, you know, a few days of working have basically turned back, you know, months and months of quarantine overeating. So I'm feeling
good. Turn back the clock. Now, when you say quarantine overeating, are you one to eat out or are you mostly a cook at home type of family, you and the missus?
You know, were we not in the middle of absolutely nowhere, we would be more of an eating out type of family. But we're no strangers to cooking for ourselves. As a matter of fact, here's a nice little recipe for you.
Hit me. Love it.
Get yourself some Brussels sprouts. And let's not
okay,
forget...
Okay, stop right there.
Okay.
Stop right there. Nothing good has ever come where the first ingredient is Brussels sprouts.
I don't fully disagree with you if we were living in the past. I want to say it was some, like, Norwegian scientists or whatever. They successfully engineered Brussels sprouts to be not terrible, like how we remember them. Like, Brussels sprouts used to be a punishment when we were growing up, you know what I mean? But now Brussels sprouts are actually pretty darn good, and I'm given to understand that they've selectively bred these, engineered these Brussels sprouts so that now what you buy at the store is actually quite delicious.
Interesting.
So you've got a cast iron skillet, right?
I absolutely do. So what's okay. The recipe? I'll humor you.
So the recipe, go ahead, throw yourself a tablespoon of butter inside of a cast iron skillet, and take your Brussels sprouts, you know, clean them, and then cut them just in half, and put them in your cast iron skillet. Be sure to let the butter, you know, nice and hot. Go ahead, sear those Brussels sprouts, and then once they're seared, flip them over, of course, let them, you know, get hot on both sides. You know how this works.
I am not a
recipe instruction maker, okay? So
yeah, you could have just said cook the Brussels sprouts,
and then once they're done cooking, but while they're still in the pan, put hoisin sauce on them.
And that's the whole recipe?
And that's the whole recipe, and they are delicious.
Okay. I may try that, and I'm just going to move on. We'll talk later about what I think of that recipe.
Okay. Don't knock it till you've tried it.
Here's the thing, like, I don't feel like you can just take something that someone normally doesn't like and put some sauce on it and say, now it's better. That's just me, Mac. That's just me.
Dude.
Like, I don't like liver. And I don't think I would like liver with barbecue sauce. Like, I don't think that would change my view of liver. But I trust your judgment, so I'm going to try it at some point.
Excellent. And again...
Hashtag YOLO. You only live once.
And again, I think the thing to keep in mind is that the Brussels sprouts we remember are significantly more bitter and unpleasant than Brussels sprouts of today. And
So get genetically re-engineered... Brussels sprouts, cook them, put them in, what was the sauce called?
Hoisin sauce,
and then they are better. Fantastic.
Yeah, they're really, really good.
Awesome. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I know that you are not here today to talk about...
No, it's Cooking with Maxion.
Cooking with Maxion, exactly. Hashtag, that could be a bonus episode. You're here to hear about video games, and so, Mac, I say we do what we do best, and we hop right into the gaming news, man.
Absolutely.
Let's do it. Ladies and gentlemen, this is episode number 138 of Two Nerds in a Pod. We're doing it not on Twitch this week for some various reasons, but we're still going to have just as much fun. Tweet at us your thoughts when you listen after the fact. Here's the first news story of the week. Mac, this one is going to be right up your alley. This is on Kotaku.com by Ethan Gock. It says, what appears to be an unprecedented trove of information related to several past Nintendo consoles was leaked to the internet last Friday. Many of the thousands of leaked files concern Nintendo's 2006 Wii console, including detailed design documents and even seemingly its source code. Such information would be of great interest to emulation enthusiasts, data miners, and anyone curious about the Japanese gaming giant's notoriously secretive past. Now, Mac, this article goes on to say that there are some N64 ROMs that are on there, some test files that were used in the building of the Nintendo 64. What do you think about this leak from a game preservationist perspective? Is this a good thing? Is this something that should have been released in the past? Or should people just stop leaking stuff? What do you think?
Well, I mean, I think most of our frustration that comes at leaks, which I think we're going to talk a bit more about later, comes from the leaking of things that haven't already been. You know? Spoilers.
Right.
Things like that. But I feel like this, where it's already happened, and there's not really that much new for us to have spoiled, anything sort of retroactively looking is just kind of an excellent treat. I hardly think we should view this in the same narrow view as we do the spoilers of the future.
Yeah, I agree. These definitely aren't spoilers. And I think that Nintendo, who it says has not commented yet, will probably be the ones who are frustrated by this more than the gamers, because it will allow people to emulate the old Wii games, right? Now, if they had plans potentially to release those in the future or to re-release them on the eShop, now those plans are probably quote-unquote spoiled because people will have access to them another way. The other thing is, it seems like some of these old N64 games or N64 demos that are leaked are things that were previously unreleased. And to me, that's a good thing. I think it's cool that we get to see the process that Nintendo went through in testing the N64 and making sure that it would be the great gaming console that it was. And it's a part of history to me. You know, I wish that more gaming companies would just release some of these old demos, some of these old test games that they use to make a console what it is. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely, 100%. As a matter of fact, I feel like most video game companies ought to have what myself and other people in game preservation game history enthusiasts, if you will, have called end-of-life plans for their video games and their video game consoles as well. And to my mind, if you are no longer going to be selling your game or your game console in the case of shutting down the Wii, you know, why not release the source code for that? And if I may, because the Wii was, you know, stopped being sold anymore, and then stopped being supported, especially when they shut down the Wii store so that you could no longer purchase titles for your original Wii. One of the things that would be really nice about this sort of thing is if Nintendo wanted to no longer support or pay for the bandwidth that Wii consoles were using, if people were permitted the type of access that source code would permit, or even some kind of in-between thing, people who still wanted to, say, release games for the Wii, or even just continue to have a functioning Wii console in that respect of being connected to the Wii store or the other online components, that could be patched in such a way as to allow people to have private servers that allowed for the continued use.
I agree 100%. I agree 100%. And literally yesterday, I was playing a game with my brother, and we were talking about the old GoldenEye Wii that came out several years ago, and how we played a few games, we had a good time. It would be fun to hop back in and just mess around and get a game or two in, even if the community's dead. You know, he and I could just play it one-on-one, but the servers are dead. That's not really an option anymore. So I agree with you 100% about that.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff from the past that is completely unre-experienceable, unrediscoverable because of stuff like that, because of nonsense like, oh, well, you know, we don't want to support this anymore, so therefore nobody gets to touch it anymore. Seems a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, and if you're someone who likes achievements or trophies in game, if you know Sony or Microsoft stops supporting a game that has online achievements, you can't get those achievements anymore. It's just impossible. So, I agree. People should be able to make their own servers and continue these games. Anyway, moving on to the next news story. This is on GameInformer.com by Matthew Cato. It says, Microsoft has announced an Inside Xbox presentation featuring Xbox Series X games on May 7th at 8 a.m. Pacific for the upcoming holiday console. And also, Mac, Microsoft has announced that there will be a once-a-month Xbox live stream going forward, similar to Nintendo Direct, once the new Xbox comes out. Now that E3 has been canceled, now that a lot of people are starting to go digital and live stream their game announcements and their console announcements, once coronavirus is over, do we ever go back? Do we ever have big game conventions where things are released, or rather announced? Or do we just have these individual three companies, Sony, Nintendo, Microsoft, and some developers just announce their stuff via their own live stream?
Oh, I don't know. I think it's fair to say that any attempts to predict the future have almost always fallen flat on their face. Unless, of course, you say enough stuff and we extend the trend lines far enough, then eventually you're going to get something right. But basically what I'm getting to is that I don't know for sure, and I would be a liar if I claimed I did, but I'll tell you what I hope. And what I hope, Mr. Nice Guy, is I hope that we get to do the in-person events once again, because my goodness, wasn't there just some electricity in the air when we went to E3 together?
There was, man, and other conventions we did too, and times when I've gone to PAX. I know I didn't do that with you, but I've done that before, and it's just fun, you know. You hang out with your friends, it's in person. It's kind of like couch co-op, right? It's kind of like a throwback, and as much as guys like you and I still really like couch co-op, a lot of people would rather just do that stuff over the internet. From a cost perspective, it's got to be, in fact, I know, you know, just common sense would lead us to believe that it's way less expensive for Sony, Microsoft, or Nintendo to just live stream these events than it is for them to go to E3, bring all the staff, bring all the equipment necessary, practice someone doing a press conference in front of, you know, hundreds, thousands of people. And then, you know, potentially having things go wrong as opposed to just doing it over a live stream in a much more controlled environment. So cost alone leads me to believe that we'll see more of this in the future and less of stuff being announced at events. That's just my thought.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's one of these things where up until now, this has been an industry standard to go to things. But and this isn't the first time that a company or companies have bowed out of stuff like E3, but we are at the, you know, the early stages. Like, it's only been the past several years that we've had big companies say, nah, no E3 this year. And now that there is no E3 at all, it's hard to see how these guys would not want to just say, well, we seemed to do fine without going to it, and then have that kind of go away.
Which, well, plus they get all the glory if they do their own event. They don't have to compete with who won E3, with who had the best game of show. They can literally not worry about what their competition is doing and just not try to outdo people, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's true. They may not wind up being as directly compared in the same breaths as they used to be.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Well, something free that's available for everybody. You can use code DSPLYMBR to get 1 year of PS Plus for $36.99. It is normally, I believe it's normally $60, $59.99. So you're saving, what, 40% on that? So anyone who's a gamer wants that PS Plus, please hop on that deal. Mac, we're going to keep the gaming news brief this week. That is what I have for the gaming news.
Let's look into the past. Let's see what games came out this week in years before, and talk about maybe how impactful they were for us. So let's open up with Elder Scrolls III Morrowind, released for the PC in 2002. I wanted to mention this one because I only recently became aware, in spite of having played Morrowind before, I only recently became aware how many books there were in the game itself. I know that I had, like, looked through bookshelves and seen a bunch of different books, but did you know that there is, like, 1,000 or some crazy bonkers number of individual books in that game? And they have actual writing in them. Like, even the shortest of the books have something like a page of content, you know what I mean? And I'm talking like, you know, double-spaced, you know, normal run-of-the-mill one-page size 10 font Times New Roman stuff. It's bonkers. And the amount of lore that is in that I just never realized before. I don't know how many people they had on that game that were working on just writing up these various books to be found in-world, but it's staggering.
It's always interesting to me because as a game developer, you know that when you make a game, especially if it's an open world game, a lot of people are not going to experience a lot of the content that you worked on.
Mm-hmm.
But to put all those books in there, like I would bet that the majority of those books, let me rephrase that, the majority of people who played those games did not sit around and read the books.
Well, I mean, isn't that what we are playing video games for, Mr. Nice Guy, is to read?
I mean, I think that reading is an essential part of games, but I don't think that when you're going through a world, an RPG, trying to level up your character and using magic, I don't think people are taking the time to read a book.
Mm.
That's just me, the majority of people.
Yeah, you're probably right. You're probably right. So like me, most people, you're saying, did not realize that Morrowind had that many books in it.
Right, yeah, I think so. I didn't realize that either.
Yeah, I think that's fair. So, you know, all credit here going to the people, you know, to the Elder Scrolls, the Bethesda team, or the Elder Scrolls team at Bethesda for putting in the time, the effort, and the energy to make something that's so, you know, so expansive, adds a lot to the world, but yet was really easy to just not notice. It's touches like that that make take a game and make it go from great to amazing, you know?
I agree.
Next game, released in 1992, Wolfenstein 3D. Now, the id Software has a special place in my heart because I was a big fan of the Commander Keen games.
Oh, I loved those games, or that game, rather. Were there a bunch of them?
Yeah, there were six in the main series, and then there was another kind of slight spin-off one called Keen Dreams, so technically there are seven Commander Keen titles.
Nice. One hit and you die. That's what I remember about it.
Oh, man, that was definitely the case. It was rough, but nonetheless, it was, you know, it was really quite fantastic. The games, I mean, I just love them. But we're here to talk about Wolfenstein 3D, not Commander Keen, and it probably shouldn't surprise you, of course, if you've got those ideas, general ideas of when Commander Keen was released, that Wolfenstein, this 3D game, came out right about the same time as Commander Keen. And yeah, it wasn't that far after, I believe, Commander Keen 4 that they released Wolfenstein 3D. Now, of course, Wolfenstein 3D is not actually 3D in, you know, not all of its assets, not all of the things in there are actually three-dimensional models. They took advantage of things like, I believe it's called view tracing, to kind of simulate 3D, and the sprites and all the things that you ran into were in fact 2D sprites, but just being showed at various angles or changing the angles as you moved around in order to give this sort of semblance of 3D to it. Just some amazing stuff that went on in the whole development process of Wolfenstein 3D. There are actually a couple of books that I have not yet purchased for myself, but look forward to doing so and reading in my off time about the development of Wolfenstein 3D. But just one little interesting tidbit that I did read in one of the previews is that apparently the publishing company was worried about Wolfenstein 3D not selling. They're like, ooh, this is very violent. This is very adult themes here in the sense of, you know, violence and Nazis and all that. And they were like, we don't know if this will sell. And so these guys were all like in their, you know, early 20s, you know, rebels at heart. And they're like, oh, okay, we hear what you're saying. And then they went back and they're like, dial up
make
the
it,
gore.
Make it worse. Exactly.
Exactly. And they did. They did make it worse. And it was published with no changes to their game. The publisher didn't come down on them for anything. And it wound up being, in some cases, in some states, or sorry, in some countries, a success de scandale, and in others, just a general run-of-the-mill success, kind of like for us. Yeah. But yeah, Wolfenstein 3D. And then the last one, and because all good things come in three, and I did not plan for all three games to have a three in them, Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon, released for the PC and Xbox 360 this last week in 2013. We follow the trail of Rex Power Colt, played by the same guy who did, I keep spacing his name every time it matters. It's not Sean Bean. It's like Sean something.
There's a lot of Seans out there.
There
man.
Are
it
a
makes
lot.
It hard.
It'll come back to me. Point being is that he was the one who he voiced Kyle Reese in the first Terminator movie, and he was also in Aliens, the second of the Alien franchise. And I mean, just fantastic. He's got that voice that just oozes the 80s. You hear his voice and you think 80s and 90s action star. So anyway, he's the main character. He voices him. It's just pitch perfect everything, and I love Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon. It's probably one of my favorite first person shooters ever. So
nice.
There you go. Three games. All of them have a three in it to commemorate this week in years past.
We're going to keep the podcast moving and talk about the topic of the week, a segment where we talk about something relevant in gaming and give our opinions on it. Mac, let's have a conversation about The Last of Us Part 2. How do you feel about that?
I feel like we could have a conversation on it. I will smile and nod and interject as appropriate to conversation conventions.
Well, there's some things, just general, you know, questions about gaming, because I know you're not a PlayStation 4 guy, and that's totally cool. But there's just some stuff that's happened surrounding the release of the game that I find suspect that we can discuss. So let's start with the facts. I'm going to actually use as reference a story here on Kotaku written by Michael McWhorter to get us started, and then I'll just give some of my own thoughts based on stuff I've read. So it says, unidentified hackers appear to have been responsible for the massive leak of The Last of Us Part 2 months ahead of the game's release, according to multiple reports. Those hackers reportedly gained access to files relating to The Last of Us Part 2 by exploiting a vulnerability in previous games developed by Naughty Dog. So, Mac, just to kind of summarize what's been going on, a couple weeks ago, there were some leaks posted to YouTube. They showed supposedly key story elements of the game. We are not going to discuss the leaks here. In fact, I've been able to avoid them so far. Fingers crossed that will continue. They leaked a big portion of the game. And then as a result of it, Naughty Dog gave us a release date for The Last of Us Part 2 of the 19th of next month, of June. Now, previously, they had delayed The Last of Us Part 2 indefinitely due to coronavirus and other reasons that they gave. Mac, this all seems really, really weird to me. Do you have any thoughts on this just generally? Obviously, leaks are bad, but I've kind of given you my thoughts on if I really feel like they needed to delay the game in the first place. Do you have any thoughts on this? If not, you can smile and nod.
You know, I am to a certain extent smiling and nodding right now, but, you know, I understand the frustration at having things spoiled, especially for a game that is, if it keeps to form from the first one, is going to rely so heavily on your experiencing the story with fresh eyes.
Yep.
But I will say, of course, just in case anybody has not heard your views on it before, it is suspect, of course, that a game that was going to be indefinitely postponed on the heels of a leak about the story, you know, can suddenly now be brought forward, you know?
Yeah, and those are my thoughts. I feel like Naughty Dog was not honest with us as a consumer. I feel like they delayed the game due to coronavirus, which is totally acceptable. I don't feel like it was delayed because the game was not done. I feel like they delayed the game because they knew that people would not be able to purchase the physical copies, and they wanted a good sales of their game. I mean, that's totally understandable. They're in this business to make money. They also probably felt like they wanted everyone to be able to experience it at the same time, and that, I think, is admirable. people. Because people who maybe don't have a good internet connection, or just don't have hard drive space or whatever, wouldn't have been able to buy the game digitally day one. And then guess what would have happened, Mac? The game would have been spoiled for them.
I suppose. Now, it wasn't the first time this delay from coronavirus and then the indefinite delay was not the first time that Naughty Dog had announced a delay to The Last of Us Part 2.
No, they had delayed it once or twice already.
Weren't we at the time speculating that the delay was a result of trying to wait until the new console gen had come out?
Potentially to push it closer to the next console gen, because the reality is they are going to release this game for the PlayStation 4. There was no way in my mind that they were going to wait until November or December of this year to release the game. They want this install base of PlayStation 4 users to be able to enjoy this experience. If they released it solely on the PlayStation 5, they would miss out on a huge amount of sales, because not everyone's going to buy a PS5 day one. Additionally, Sony has said that there will be limited quantities available of the PlayStation 5, much like there was last gen with the PS4.
But wouldn't this have made Last of Us Part 2 the PlayStation 5's killer app?
Oh, it absolutely would have, and I believe there is absolutely no doubt that it will be available on the PlayStation 5, maybe even with slightly better graphics, maybe even with multiplayer, because they've effectively said there's going to be no multiplayer with this Last of Us Part 2 on PlayStation 4. Doesn't mean that there won't be multiplayer in the future, but on the original release, there will not be. And so there's been speculation that maybe there will be Last of Us Part 2 multiplayer on the PlayStation 5 as a patch, but not on the PS4. They did a similar thing with the Last of Us Remastered on PS4, right? The original came out on PS3. The remaster comes out on PS4. It has all the DLC. It has updated graphics. It was well worth your money, even if you had played it before. So, I mean, I think that they could do something on the PS5 that makes that killer app that people want close to, release within that release window.
Gotcha.
So yeah, I mean, I really like Naughty Dog. They're kind of beloved in the industry. They put out really good games. But I cannot believe that the initial delays, or rather the secondary delays, were the result of coronavirus. I think they were just concerned about sales, and I feel like they should have just been honest about that and said, listen, we want everyone to experience this game at the same time. We also think that sales won't be as good if it's released at a time when everyone is quarantined. So those are my thoughts on The Last of Us. Now, that said, it's going to be, no doubt, a Game of the Year candidate, and I cannot wait to see what they have done. Actually, you know what, Mac? I can wait, and I'm going to avoid the spoilers for that reason. Anything else you want to add to this topic?
No, I mean, I can't follow that up.
That's been our topic of the week. If you have thoughts on this, tweet at us, Two Nerds in a Pod, or hit us up on Twitch and all that good stuff.
All right, well, having just said that I can't follow that up, now I'm going to follow it up with something completely different. And that would be our kick or kickstart. Let's take a look at a crowdfunding effort that's underway. Let's talk about the virtues and the vices, and then let's say whether or not we think it should be kicked or kicked out of here. Now, I'm going to share the link with you just now for Black Book. So, Black Book is a turn-based exploratory RPG based on Russian mythology. It's going for $35,000. It has 31 days left, and the game delivery is supposed to be in or around February of 2021 with a minimum buy-in of $15. Like I said, they're going for $35,000. They're currently about $6,500 at the moment with plenty of time. It's going to be released on PC as well as, quote, future and current consoles. They do specifically state that their intent is for everybody to be able to play it, so they're going to work hard to make sure that it's released on main, you know, on the main consoles. So, some good things about this. I really like what they're doing here. They have a playable demo, of course, where the playable demo portion is the prologue, which is apparently completely done and is as it will appear in the final game. So if you try this game out, this is what you can expect. And again, they say it is as it will appear in the final game, which leads me to believe, you know, that's the implication, is that they don't intend on changing the graphics. I suppose it's always possible that through the Kickstarter process, they might have sufficient money that they might update some things, but, you know, nothing said about that. So this is the first Kickstarter that this team has done. However, the team has before made a fairly well-received game called The Moose Man. It's not a game I had heard of before.
I've never heard of it either, but you can't judge a book by its name, right?
Apparently not. And reviews on said game would seem to bear that out. It is available on Steam, and they even have it available on the Google Play Store, so I also assume that it's available for iOS as well. And it's fairly well reviewed on all three of those platforms. Somewhere in the between 70 and 90% is what you're looking at, or in stars version, you know, between 4 and 5 stars for most ratings. So it seems to be that they've got a pretty good idea, a finger on the pulse of what video gamers like ourselves wish to play. If you want your name to show up in the game in, say, text form, for $65 backing it, your name could appear in a on a gravestone in the game. And at around the $700 backing range, you could actually start contributing ideas to the game, such as helping to make a card in the game, or at $1,000, you know, helping to design an actual event, and more substantial things from there. One thing I didn't mention about it is that the turn-based combat in it relies off of the use of cards. It's a mechanic that's somewhat similar to things like Slay the Spire or some such. I might not be doing it quite justice, but, you know, that's what the idea evokes for me.
Interesting.
So, yeah, Mr. Nice Guy, what do you think about it?
I like the idea. I've never really been big into turn-based fighting games. And every time I try to pick one up, it ends up being a disappointment to me. So I tried picking up Fire Emblem back in the day, and it's just always a disappointment because it's just not my style of game. Now, that said, I'm not here to judge if I would like this game. I'm here to judge if it's a good business model and if I think it should be kickstarted. I like the graphics. It almost looks like, would you agree with me? It looks almost like a watered down Breath of the Wild type of graphic.
I think I could agree with that.
That's kind of how I see it. So I like what they're doing graphically. I feel like they are kind of unspecific with certain things. They say that it's going to come to current and future consoles. I feel like they really need to say which console specifically it's coming to.
Mm-hmm.
And my thing is with Kickstarters, oftentimes, Mac, we see that these people come up with an idea, but then they have a stretch goal. They'll say it's coming to PC, but if we reach $100,000 in the time limit, then we'll also make it come to Nintendo Switch. These folks are looking for $35,000. It doesn't look like they have stretch goals, and they seem to imply that they can make this come to every console. That's simply not feasible because there are additional fees the more consoles you want to release it on, right? So that seems a little bit suspect to me, but I like the look of it. I like the effort that they've put into this. They have a good social media presence. They have a Discord so they can communicate with people. And the game looks like, if it's your cup of tea, it looks like it's well made.
Yeah, so I quite like the look of it. I like what they're doing. I think they're doing a pretty good job of it. And even though this may be their first Kickstarter, it looks like they've paid close attention to some of the aspects of previously successful Kickstarters, and they've certainly taken note of my golden rule of needing a playable demo before it gets a Kickstart from me. All that being said, the fact that they've got a prologue that is fully complete kind of bodes very well for this, you know, for this release date in 2021. So yeah, I'm cautiously optimistic, and I think I'm ready to say what I think.
Yeah, me too. One last compliment I want to give them. I'm looking at the backing amounts, and it says that you are indeed getting it at a discount if you pay $15 for the early bird. And I'm a big believer that if you kickstart something, you should get it at a cheaper price. And so I like that they are doing that.
Mm-hmm. Now, to be fair, that early bird, that discounted price of $15 is only valid for the first 200 people who back at that. There are only, at time of recording, 68 spots left for that, after which it would be just, you know, the $20 and so on.
Yeah, exactly.
A solid kickstart from me.
Yeah, I think it should be kickstarted with the caveat that I really do feel like they have underestimated the amount that this is going to cost. The licensing fees that it will take to get this on a Microsoft, on a Sony, and on a Nintendo console are going to be more than they can do with $35,000. Not that it will cost $35,000 to get licensed on all three of those, but to develop the game, to pay yourself, to market it, and to get it on all those places is going to cost more than what they are asking.
Well, here's to hoping then that they do pull in more than the required $35,000 in order to help make all those things a reality then. Kickstart, it is from both you and I, and those of you who are listening to this after the fact, let us know. We're tabulating the results from here.
Well, it's time for our next segment, y'all. A segment we like to call Nerdflex. Woohoo! A segment where we talk about some nerdy stuff and try to stump ourselves. Oftentimes people send questions in. This week we're going with some questions that I found on the internet. I do not know the answers in advance. Mac, we're going to go old school today. We're gonna talk about arcade.
Awesome. May I interject real quick?
Please do.
Every so often, as part of our Nerdflex segment, we will have a sound test where, you guys get a chance to stump us during the Nerdflex segment, so we get a chance to stump you with the prize of a Perler to be given to the first person to correctly identify the game that the sound test comes from on Twitter, at @2nerdsinapod, with the hashtag soundtest. At the current moment of recording, we still have sound tests left to be claimed from episodes 131 and 135, and now here in episode 138 we are going to give you another one. So
fantastic.
Ears open, be ready, here it comes.
Awesome. Mac, did you already say how they win that if they want to try to play?
Yes, indeed, but it's worth saying again. Tweet at @2nerdsinapod with the hashtag soundtest. Let us know your guess, and hopefully you can win a Perler made by my hands delivered to your door. And so with no further ado, let's get back to Nerdflex.
All right. Now, Mac, you used to work in an arcade, right, back in the day?
I did, yeah. It would have been my first year of college.
Now, and I spent a lot of time in arcades growing up, and I'm a big arcade game guy, so let's see if we can go 3 for 3 today. Here is the first question, and these are multiple choice. We'll see if we can get them without the choices. If I'm using a rollerball as a controller to try to fight off insects, which game am I playing?
Okay. A rollerball to fight off insects?
Correct.
Let's see. I know that Missile Command used a rollerball. I know that Marble Madness used a rollerball as well, but I can't think of an insect one that involved a rollerball. Can you?
So I can think of a game that involves insects, but it's a game that I played on PC. It is a classic arcade game, though, and it's, Centipede.
Centipede, okay. Well, that does seem to be fitting with it. So I would certainly yield to your expertise on this one.
So we can go with Centipede. Let's answer all three, and then we'll look at the answers at the end.
Okay, Centipede it is for question one.
Okay, question number two. And I have no idea. Which arcade game allowed you to get on a motorcycle and use it as the controller?
Oh, well, there are a couple that I can think of, but the names honestly are escaping me. Can you read the multiple choices for us?
The multiple choices are Pole Position, Moon Patrol, Spy Hunter, or Hang On.
I'm pretty sure it's either Pole Position or Hang On, but Hang On is the one that I'm definitely leaning more toward.
See, and I know Spy Hunter is a game, but I also know that it did not, at least I don't think it had a motorcycle you could use as a controller, from what I remember. I've never heard of Hang On.
I'm 99% sure I've seen Hang On in an arcade with a, you know, motorcycle that you lean on. That was how you controlled it. You had a throttle and you did the leaning. So
okay, let's go with Hang On then.
Okay.
Next question. What game has you controlling a spacecraft down a three-dimensional tube destroying your enemies? And we'll go with the multiple choices.
Yeah.
The first one is Gorf, Berserky, or Berserkle, rather, Time Pilot, and Tempest.
If I had to guess, I would say either Time Pilot or Tempest.
I know it's not Gorf. I seem to remember playing Tempest, and it is one of those games, I believe, where you're going down a tube and you're like rotating around it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense.
And shooting. So I'm going to go with Tempest if you're cool with that.
Yeah, sure. Let's go with Tempest. So for our three answers, we've gone with Centipede, Hang On, and Tempest.
All right, so let's see what the answers are. So the first one was, if I'm using a rollerball as a controller to fight off insects, what am I playing? We said Tempest. We said Centipede, and that is the correct answer.
Yes.
Next one was, which arcade game allowed you to get on a motorcycle and use it as the controller? Our answer was Hang On. That's correct.
Woohoo, 2 for 2.
It was released by Sega in 1985. And the last question was, which game has you controlling a spacecraft down a three-dimensional tube destroying your enemies? We said Tempest. Boom. Tempest was right.
Excellent. 3 for 3.
Well, Mac, that has been our Nerd Flex for the week. Everyone submit to that sound test and tweet at us.
Yes, indeed. And if you're there for the live show, don't forget you can also participate by either submitting your own nerdy trivia questions ahead of time or doing so live when we do the show. Now comes a little bit of legalese.
Legalese.
So, Mr. Nice Guy, last time yes. I mentioned, because you had said something about me not knowing basketball.
And sports in general. Let's
indeed. I came prepared with some sports ball law.
Oh, let's hear it.
However, Mr. Nice Guy, something bigger happened this week.
Uh-oh.
In that, as we know, Billy Mitchell got stripped of his high scores by Twin Galaxies, right?
Right, I remember.
We talked about that. He has filed a lawsuit.
Ah.
And so we come to a thing. Would you rather hear about Billy Mitchell suing Twin Galaxies, or would you rather hear about sports ball law?
I mean, there's no question. I'd rather hear about Billy Mitchell suing Twin Galaxies, man. The King of Kong, Mac.
Okay.
One of my favorite documentaries of all time. I definitely want to hear about this.
All right. Well, then we will save sports ball for later. For now, it's William James Mitchell, Billy Mitchell, of course, as the plaintiff, versus Twin Galaxies LLC. It is filed for essentially defamation. So if we actually go to the very end of the complaint, and the very, very end tells us who's filing, who is representing Billy Mitchell. I learned this trick from an actual lawyer, to go to the end first, and found it to be an interesting source, is that Billy's lawyers in this case are the firm of Manning and Cass, Elrod Ramirez Trester. And that is a legit law firm. They've been practicing law for quite some time. Their firm specializes in retail, restaurant, and hospitality litigation. That comes directly from, from their website. They say that's their specialty. And for this reason, I suspect that these are probably Billy's lawyers. With regard to, like, his restaurant. Because Billy's got a restaurant, right?
I did not know that. Is the food delicious?
Well, I don't know if the food's delicious, but he does mention it in Kings of Kong. He does actually mention, he's got several pictures of himself in the restaurant and several, of the moments are there. But the firm doesn't only do that. They also have about 175 lawyers in the firm. And have plenty of expertise in different things. Let's get to the facts of the case. So, what is being asked? Billy Mitchell is asking for compensatory damages in an amount to be proven at trial. He wants a jury trial, BT-dubs. He wants punitive damages. He wants a pre-judgment interest for the cost of the suit and for such other and further relief as the court may deem just and proper. So he wants money, not surprisingly.
He wants quarters so he can play that Donkey Kong.
You gotta have a fistful of quarters. So we've got two courses of action. The first course of action is slander. And so what he says is he does say that Twin Galaxies never said that Billy Mitchell was a cheater directly. They did not say Billy Mitchell is a cheater. What they did say is they did say that his records had been established under false pretenses, or at least implied as much so that any reasonable reader would understand that Twin Galaxies had called Billy Mitchell a cheater who deserved punishment by stripping him of all his Twin Galaxy records and banning him for life from submitting further records. And this, I do not disagree with that statement. I think to any of us who heard about, read about, or even read the actual statement from Twin Galaxies, the take-home message that we got is Billy Mitchell was cheated.
That boy cheated.
Yeah, that was it. The next paragraph, that's the statement, was false. In fact, the records were established on arcade software, witnessed by hundreds of people who have submitted sworn affidavits that they have witnessed Mitchell achieve these scores on arcade software. That, as far as I'm aware, we do not have affidavits attached. We do not have any that sort of thing. And as far as I'm aware, last we had heard, there were no affidavits and there was nobody who was who had been present for these things. And furthermore, last we had heard that the whole reason for removing these records was that it was determined that the way that scene transitions were being made, that the scene transitions could not have happened on actual arcade hardware. They had to have been software emulated on, you know, on MAME, on any of those multi-arcade game engines. Like, for example, the one that you've got sitting downstairs.
Raspberry Pi,
yeah.
Right.
But that those, because they load differently on account of various software tricks used to the, because keep in mind that most of the emulation that we've got going on, emulators tend to be a kind of a reverse engineering of sorts of the way that the console operates, and often not actually the way that it operates. But that's a conversation for another time.
Put it in layman's terms. You can save state, right? You can do all kinds of little tricks. You can speed it up. You can slow it down. You can play frame by frame. So it makes it advantageous for someone who wants to cheat to use that type of software and then to edit it after the fact.
Absolutely. And while that certainly can be the case, the big thing that they talked about, that Twin Galaxies people talked about when they were talking about why we're getting rid of Billy Mitchell's scores, is they're like, Billy Mitchell's, you know, million point Donkey Kong score, which, as I, if I recall properly, is the tape, the VHS tape that in the Kings of Kong thing that he mailed, that kind of, you know, to crush Steve Weeb and Weeby in the, you know, when he was there doing the arcade in person to prove that he had the stuff, and Billy mailed in that tape, or like had somebody take the tape, but you know, that tape that they presented, I do believe that that's the one that they're talking about, you know? Anyway, point being is that, you know, he says it's false, and he says, you called me a liar, it's false, that's a defamatory statement with actual malice, i.e. with knowledge of its falsity, or alternatively with a reckless disregard for its falsity and without privilege or justification. And here's what's going to be very interesting about this case. Because he's trying to establish that not only are these claims false, he's going to also need to show, or at least with a jury, prove beyond a reasonable doubt that these statements were made, and they were made with the express purpose. You know, the people at Twin Galaxies knew it was false, and they were trying to damage Billy. And that might be difficult. So anyway, basically that's where we are. These statements being made with actual malice is the, you know, the actual things. Everything else in the, you know, in the several page thing is for the most part various, you know, various things, general allegations, information, and the like. But that's the real meat of it. He says they lied and they knew that these scores were legit, and they did this, you know, they did this to damage me, and so I want, you know, I'm here seeking damages. So that's where we are right now. This no doubt will take some time, but I am very excited for the discovery process of this and what discovery will turn up, because discovery is, yeah, of course, the period of time that, unlike anything, there is no such thing as surprise witnesses in real court cases. You know what's going, what people are going to say, because there's been depositions, there have been conversations, and you know who the witnesses are long in advance. So, so I'm interested to see what comes out as a result of discovery, but it can be difficult to prove the malice. So,
yeah, now to Billy Mitchell's credit, he is definitely very passionate about games, which I think we can all respect regardless of, you know, whether or not he cheated. Obviously, cheating is wrong. Mac, he streams on Twitch, and he seems to stream almost exclusively Donkey Kong. So it's not like he, you know, doesn't really like the game and he's just being petty. It probably really hurt him that, one, he's being called a cheater, and two, he is banned for life from submitting records, right?
Oh, yeah.
That's got to hurt no matter who you are. And I can't speak to what his motivation is for this lawsuit, but it's got to be a tough situation for both parties.
Yeah, sure. And I don't disagree if you feel like, if that's the truth, I mean, more power to him. All I know so far is that I think he's going to have an uphill battle on this lawsuit, but I hope that the truth prevails.
Well, Matt, maybe he'll even walk away with a fistful of quarters. You see what I did there?
Oh, I see what you did there.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, that has been our show. Thank you so much for tuning in to episode number 138 of Two Nerds in a Pod. Now, before we go, we like to do one last segment called What We've Been Watching and What We've Been Playing, where we talk about just that, the cool, nerdy stuff we've been into on streaming services, on game consoles, on mobile devices, and on PC. And you have a job to do. Tweet at us the cool stuff that you've been watching and playing, because we're always looking for nerdy stuff to get into. Mac, what have you been into this week?
So, Mrs. the Mac and I have been watching Once Upon a Time. We're into season 3 now, I think. And we're a little bit concerned that, well, we're concerned that they've only got one note in Once Upon a Time. That they've only got one well of ideas, and they're going to keep on pulling from it.
Oh, one trick pony type
yep,
of thing?
One trick pony for sure. But don't say anything. That's just where we're worried at the moment.
I will not say anything.
Let's see. What else? We are always watching Star Trek. It's a great way to unwind. And we found this delightful documentary that we finished called Above Majestic. And by delightful, I mean it's terrible. It's terrific. There was this Simpsons episode where Grandpa Simpson mixed this health elixir. And basically, it was just an aphrodisiac, right? And so suddenly, all of the kids are being told to go outside and play while the adults have private time. And so the kids are up in Bart's treehouse trying to figure out what's going on with the adults, and they come up with this whole theory, and they've got a chalkboard, and they say, and Milhouse presents it, and he's like, okay, we finally figured it out. The Rand Corporation, in coordination with the reverse vampires, at the direction of the saucer people, are making all of the parents go to bed early in a dedicated attempt to remove and destroy the institution of dinner time. We're through the looking glass, people. And that moment of Simpsons personified and distilled into a single documentary is Above Majestic, because it's got everything. It's got cabals, Illuminati, saucer people. It has lizard people. It has just everything. It's great.
They're trying to do a lot, it sounds
like. Oh, yeah. They're trying to do a lot. And it's fantastic, frankly.
Cool. Anything else? Or I mean, that's a lot right there.
Oh, that's a lot right there. As for playing, I've been playing some Halo Reach with a good friend of mine.
Nice.
What else? And I reorganized my Steam library so that I can more effectively track the games that I need to play next from my backlog.
Now, I gotta know, is this your first playthrough of Halo Reach?
No, it is not.
Gotcha, because it's phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
Well, cool. Sounds like you're into some really cool stuff. Now, as far as what I have been into, almost solely Teamfight Tactics, as far as what I have been playing. My brother and I absolutely adore that game. Riot Games, y'all are killing it. I've been playing the ranked mode, and I'm currently in the Silver 3 rank, hoping to get up to gold by the end of this week, and then move my way on up to the Platinum. As far as what I've been watching, my wife and I just got to Season 7 of Arrow on Netflix. That is such a good show. And we've been watching a lot of movies. We're going to watch the new Star Wars, quote-unquote, new Star Wars movie for date night this Saturday, so I'm super hyped for that. Rise of the Skywalker is finally out on Disney+. Or is it, what's the name of the most recent one, Mac? It's not Rise of the Skywalker. It's,
Yeah, I think it is Rise of Skywalker.
Is it Rise of the Skywalker? Yeah, we're going to watch it this weekend. And just been watching some random shows, having a good time with the family. So, anything else you want to say to the people before we go, my friend?
Well, you're all awesome.
Yeah, thank you for tuning in. Share the pod with your friends, with your family, with your enemies. We'll be back, same bat place, same bat time, same bat rhymes next week. Keep it nerdy, y'all. Deuces.
See ya.